Welcome to Guide to the Cosmos on WebTalkRadio.net with your host, Dr. Robert Piccioni, physicist, public speaker, and author of Everyone's Guide to Atoms, Einstein, and the Universe, and his new second book, Can Life Be Merely an Accident? With Robert as our guide to the cosmos, we will explore the frontiers of science and participate in the exciting discoveries of physics, astronomy, and cosmology. Now, providing public access to science, here's your host, Dr. Robert Piccioni.
Thank you for joining us and welcome back. Today we will explore a modern observatory with our guest, Dr. Edwin Krupp, director of the Griffith Observatory in Los Angeles. We'll find out what's new as the world's most popular observatory celebrates its 75th anniversary, and as the world celebrates the 400th anniversary of the first publication by Galileo of his observations of the heavens using a telescope. And we'll find out why, Dr. Krupp says, the telescope changed everything. Dr. Krupp has given us some images that we posted on our website. So open a second window and go to the website, guidetothecosmos.com. On the home page, click on the microphone icon to bring up a menu of radio shows and select today's show, A Modern Observatory. Dr. Krupp has been the director of Griffith Observatory for 35 years, and he got his PhD from UCLA from one of the most famous of all American astronomers, George Abel. Dr. Krupp has been the host on a TV series called Project Universe on PBS, and he is acknowledged as a leading world expert on astronomy of ancient societies and how their astronomy affected those societies. He has visited about 1,900 ancient astronomical sites, and he is the author of numerous books. He's written at least four books for children, including The Moon and You, as well as books for adults, including In Search of Ancient Astronomers, Archaeoastronomy and the Roots of Science, Echoes of Ancient Skies, Beyond the Blue Horizon, and Sky Watchers, Shamans, and Kings. Dr. Krupp, welcome to our show.
Thanks an awful lot, and delighted, obviously, to be guided to cosmos.
Thank you. Last time we had Dr. Krupp on our show, we discussed an ancient observatory in Ireland that is 5,000 years old. One of my friends is now going to Ireland, and she's hoping to visit Newgrange, which is only 30 miles north of Dublin. But for those of us who can't go to the Emerald Isle, let's have Ed tell us about a modern observatory that's a lot closer to home. Now, if we were going to Los Angeles instead, then I think there's a famous observatory there, isn't there?
Yeah, and I think we see a very similar pattern here at Griffith Observatory. You know, about 1 million people a year make the pilgrimage up the hill and find this public observatory, the gift of Colonel Griffith J. Griffith, who actually died back at the beginning of the 20th century, but left money in his will for its construction.
And you have a wonderful motto on your website. It says, inspiring the future, one imagination at a time.
Yeah, that's actually Friends of the Observatory, our advocacy and community support group, our primary private independent partner with the city of Los Angeles, to which we belong, adopted that as the principle for their part of the fundraising, and we advertise that as you see. Griffith Observatory belongs to and is operated by the City of Los Angeles Department of Recreation and Parks, so it's owned by the people.
And the admission is free.
Yeah, this is interesting as well. It is free, and Colonel Griffith, who was an entrepreneur in Los Angeles in the 19th century, was very interested in lots of things, including science and astronomy. He wasn't a scientist, but he appreciated science, and he very specifically left the stipulation in his will, not only describing the kind of place he wanted built, but also saying that it must be free to the public, that was the stipulation for acceptance of the gift by the city. So by the law that governs bequests like this, Griffith Observatory is, always has been, and always must be free to the public. The only thing for which there is a charge is the Planetarium Theater, the Samuel Ocean Planetarium, where we put on the planetarium programs. Mm-hmm. And the planetarium didn't exist when Griffith wrote his will, and so there had to be a friendly suit that the Griffith family supported. They actually were active in this in those early days to have the court rule that it would be legal and proper to have a planetarium and to have admission charged for that.
I see. And when was the observatory first opened?
Observatory opened on the 14th of May, 1935, and this year then marks the 75th anniversary of Griffith Observatory. We will be celebrating publicly on the 14th of May, but of course the whole year is our 75th anniversary celebration. And on the 15th of May, the day after, Friends of the Observatory is going to be partnering with us in our second annual Cosmic Conjunction, which is about the astronomy and the arts. And the key event at that Cosmic Conjunction will be a new planetarium show, Light of the Valkyries, that combines the music of Wagner and from the Ring Cycle with a show about the Earth-Sun connection in the Northern Lights.
Yeah, I don't know if I could tolerate that music, because that's what they play every morning at 7 a.m. at Caltech during finals week.
Well, and also, you know, the Ride of the Valkyries, which is the piece that we're using for our final Fantasia, where we just are going to fill the sky with Aurora Borealis.
Yeah.
But that's the famous Kill the Wabbit theme in the old Warner Brothers Bugs Bunny cartoon.
Right. Well, anyone that's gone to Caltech cringes in terror when they hear that music. Yeah. Well, one of the remarkable things about the observatory is the renovation program, which you were really responsible for, weren't you?
I wrote my first memorandum about the need to do something about Griffith Observatory in 1978, and I wrote it knowing that it would take a long time to raise a lot of money and to do really expensive things, but I had no idea it would take as long as it did. And of course, over time, our vision of what needed to be done and how it needed to be done evolved, so that by 1990, we actually produced a master plan. And then between then and 2002, we were actually very busy at work, constantly trying to develop the sources of funding for all this. And then finally, when enough came together, thanks really to the voters of the City of Los Angeles and the County of Los Angeles, we were able to begin the project, which had construction begin in the fall of 2002.
That's really a vote of confidence, because those were not particularly good economic days.
But I'll tell you, they're better than they are now. I am just grateful we did it when we did.
Mm-hmm.
We're lucky. You know, we had to buy things like a brand new Zeiss Planetarium star projector, the spectacular Universarium Mark IX fiber optic star projector, and we were in the market for buying that right when the euro was introduced. And so, in fact, not only did Zeiss work wonderfully with us because we needed them to improve their technology, we weren't quite satisfied, and we went to other manufacturers to evaluate all of them. But Zeiss not only at last agreed, but of course we were purchasing this equipment at a time that was very helpful. Now it would be very rough.
What does one of these machines cost?
You know, it depends on exactly how they're configured, but you definitely have to count in the several million-dollar range, more than three, maybe depending between three. These days, probably closer to five.
I see. And the renovation was really remarkable in the sense that, you know, since you couldn't expand the building because it's just on the top of the mountain looking over the city, you did this remarkable thing of jacking the building up, excavating below the building, and building a new level underneath the previously existing structure. Is that right?
Yeah, it's very close. And certainly you hit upon that really amazing effort in which the building had to be supported during part of this excavation. You're quite right about our location. I mean, we're like the hood ornament of Los Angeles, and we're just on the edge of this south slope of Mount Hollywood, overlooking all the stars on Hollywood Boulevard and in the entire basin of L.A. But there were three principles. This actually goes right back to the master plan when we were trying to figure out what is the right thing to do. And in the course of that, what drove us underground was also three very important rules. And we said, no matter what we do, when we finish this job, because the building is so familiar to everyone, when you see it from all over the Los Angeles basin, it must look the same. And when you make the pilgrimage and drive up the hill through Griffith Park and you finally reach the place and this building suddenly appears in front of you, that experience of the building must remain the same. And then when you are on the grounds and you have this wonderful expansive landscape and all of those views, really the best view, the best piece of public observatory real estate in the world, those views must, in fact, remain the same. And that forced us, of all the options, the only option that we could follow is to go underground, which was, of course, a more expensive option. We actually built the new underground addition around the building, not really directly under it, but under the front lawn of the building. And it is skirted around the building, and there's one place where we actually go right under the building to get to the other side, which is now what we call the wormhole, with a short way through the universe on our new lower level. But in order to do all that construction, we had to do exactly what you said, which is jack the whole thing up, because you're changing the support structures and having to build new ones and support temporarily places that you're knocking out while you're doing it. Mm-hmm. And remarkably, nothing cracked, nothing broke, nothing slipped.
That's amazing. Image number one on the website shows the Griffith Observatory at night. I think it's really remarkable that someone sends us a picture of their building at night, but that makes a tremendous amount of sense coming from an astronomer.
You know, it does, but there's one aspect I think everybody who listens to your show, you know, either might wonder about or needs to know, and that's that whole idea, wait a minute, this is an observatory, how can you have all of that light? How can you work in all of that city light? And then second, how can you have all of that light all around the building? Isn't there a contribution to light pollution and all that? And the thing to keep in mind is, yeah, of course there's a lot of city light, but our job is to put everybody eyeball to the universe. And it's remarkable what you can see telescopically, even from the light-saturated lights of Los Angeles. And that is what we do. In fact, more people have looked through the Zeiss 12-inch refractor than any telescope on the planet. More people have seen the magnified live image of the sun on our triple-beam ceilostat than anywhere else in the world. And when we are operating our telescopes at night, we actually turn all of the lights off on the front of the building, so that lawn is dark, and so the people that are using the telescopes that we put down on in front of the building actually do have a dark environment for them. But every now and then we light the building up, especially for pretty pictures.
That's great. You are listening to Guide to the Cosmos on WebTalkRadio.net. I am your host, Robert Piccioni, and we're talking about the Griffith Observatory with its director, Dr. Edwin Krupp. We'll be right back after these messages.
Explore Dr. Piccioni's website, GuideToTheCosmos.com, and check out the spectacular discounts that are available to you, our radio audience. Robert's first book, Everyone's Guide to Atoms, Einstein, and the Universe, makes the exciting discoveries of modern physics, astronomy, and cosmology understandable for everyone. And it was just selected as the best science book of the year by National Best Books. As Robert says, you don't have to be a great musician to appreciate great music, and the same is true for science. If you can change money, you can understand Einstein. Robert's second book, Can Life Be Merely an Accident?, describes how precisely tuned the universe is to support life, and shows how amazingly improbable that is. Go to Robert's website and send us your questions, comments, and suggestions for future shows. That's GuideToTheCosmos.com.
we're back talking about the Griffith Observatory with its director, Dr. Edwin Krupp. Well, what new things can we look forward to in the future of Griffith Observatory?
Well, one thing this is kind of whimsical, but I'm not so sure it applies to the future. But I would like to alert everyone to another little detail that might be amusing. We have just appeared in the production of a television show, a cable television show called Ultimate Cakeoff, where three competing world-class cake designers design a cake on the spot in the time it takes to produce the show. They've got about, I guess, 8 or 9 hours to do this, and then you know, one gets selected as the winner. Well, for this recent show, Griffith Observatory and its 75th anniversary and our Cosmic Conjunction Music and Astronomy program coming up was the theme. And so I got to watch and participate with these three fiercely competing cake designers. And what I just want people to know, if you really want to see remarkable astronomical cakes, they are coming to the Ultimate Cake Off show. I think that'll probably air sometime in March.
Oh, that's fantastic.
But as far as you know, really the programming and what's taking place at the observatory, we have just premiered just this week the final installment of our all-year International Year of Astronomy show, First Light, The Telescope Changed Everything. And the purpose and character of that planetarium show is to present it right at the transition between the evening and night. And we tell the story of Galileo and what the telescope did, but we spotlight and have for the last year, every 3 months, the objects that are in the sky at that time that were the objects that Galileo observed and made his remarkable discoveries 400 years ago. In fact, March of this year marks the 400th anniversary of his publication of these amazing results. Just 400 years ago last fall is when he first turned a telescope to the sky. And so we just opened First Light, The Telescope Changed Everything, and because Mars is really the dominant object now in our night sky, when you come out of that show and it's dark, we have telescopes out there targeted on Mars, so that you can see Mars as you'd see it with the unaided eye. You see Mars through a telescope, and of course you've just understood through the immersion of the planetarium theater, which uses not only the Zeiss projector but all dome digital animation to take you back to Padua and Galileo to see what it was like to look at it back at those times as well.
Image number 2 on the website shows the telescopes that Galileo used in his observations of the heavens. Ed, what do you think was the single most important discovery that Galileo made with the telescope?
Perfectly good one. I'll tell you where I'm going with it. I'm not sure everybody would agree with me on this, but for my money, it is definitely that the moon is a world. It is, in a sense, the easiest thing he did, because when he pointed the telescope and he saw craters and what kind of look like bodies of water, although certainly aren't the dark areas on the moon, that information transformed our understanding. The moon, you know, began as a light in the sky, became a god, then it became a place. But with Galileo, it became a world, and a world that beckoned us eventually to go there ourselves. And the interesting thing about Galileo is he wasn't the only one. He wasn't even the first person to look at the moon through a telescope. An Englishman, Thomas Harriot, beat him by a few months and made drawings of the moon, too. But the difference between these two individuals is remarkable. Harriot was interested in mapping the moon. He had a kind of a geographer's sensibility, and everything that he did was directed toward mapping. Galileo understood that the moon is a world, and it had physical meaning that transformed how we look at the Earth, at ourselves, and at the environment of the universe in which we live. That is truly a transformation of perspective of major consequence, and it's partly why we say the telescope changed everything.
So it's the genius of interpretation.
No question. And then, of course, you got to give Galileo credit for publishing. You know, I think this is the thing that people often forget. It's not enough to observe. But when you see something, you got to let people know. And Galileo was a master at promotion.
And had the courage to do so.
Yeah,
when,
you bet.
When he might have suffered being burned as a heretic at the stake.
Well, he eventually, of course, did run into trouble. And it wasn't so much from his observations, although there was skepticism about that at the time. And you can even understand some of that. I mean, there was a worldview prevailing. But where Galileo really got in hot water was over his advocacy, his open advocacy, and almost, well, I shouldn't even say almost, his inflammatory way of presenting it in his latest his later works, where he really promoted the Copernican view of the world system, or really the solar system, with the sun at the center. And he had by then developed enemies, and he had expressed himself in a way that caused him to be put on trial by the church, and in fact subsequently relegated to house arrest at Arcetri near Florence. And this was when he was an old man, and he became blind not long after that. But it's a heartbreaking end to a triumphal career.
Absolutely. Image number 3 on the website shows the big picture, which is the largest astronomical picture in the entire world.
It is. It's 150 feet long, 20 feet high, 114 panels of porcelain enamel on steel, so it is permanent, and it is a scan of a small portion of the sky by the Samuel Ocean Telescope on Palomar Mountain. That big picture, which is that big, contains the images 2 million objects, and 1 million of them are galaxies outside our own Milky Way galaxy.
That's phenomenal.
It is equivalent to the amount of sky that I cover up when I hold my finger in front of my eyes, just about a foot away or so. And so it's a tiny sliver of the entire sky, and yet that much sky contains that much material. And of course, the message there is the rest of the sky is extraordinary.
Right. And if you go to the observatory, you can stand right in front of this and see the fine detail. And then you can also view it from the balcony overlooking that area, and you can see the expanse of this big picture all at once.
And because our job is to put eyeballs to the universe every chance we get, we even have telescopes inside the building up there on that edge of space balcony. So you can examine close up with telescopes parts of the big picture that you can't walk right up to and look at as close as your eye can get.
You also have a moon rock on display at the observatory, don't you?
Yeah, NASA very satisfyingly agreed to give us a sample. We've got it on display right next to, of course, our full 6-foot globe of the moon, and it's a splendid specimen. It's really pretty big size. And when you look at a rock like that, you know, people, they often think moon rock, what's the deal? It doesn't look like a rock from the Earth. I mean, you can tell it's from somewhere else.
Anybody can see moon rocks if they're willing to look at one that's 250,000 miles away.
Yeah.
But if you want to get one close up and personal, then go to the Griffith Observatory and check out that display.
On the money.
Okay, Ed, I want to thank you very much for joining us today and telling us all about what's new and exciting at the Griffith Observatory right here in Los Angeles. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks. I enjoyed being a part of your guide to the cosmos.
And for those of you who want more information, you can go to the Griffith Observatory website, www.griffithobs.org. That's GRIFFITHOBS.org. And you can find out about Ed Krupp's books on Amazon or your favorite bookstore. Thank you for tuning in. And remember, you are never too young or too old to wonder why.
Don't forget to explore Robert's website, guidetothecosmos.com, and check out the spectacular discounts on his books that are available to you, our radio audience. Send us your questions, comments, and suggestions for future show topics. That's guidetothecosmos.com. Goodbye.